For tonight, an introduction to Dzogchen. For those of you who are able to sit cross-legged, doing so will be of benefit. So if any of the young ones who are comfortable cross-legged have gone on to chairs, you will do better to take a cushion. And I need a statement.
Okay.
Thank you. position of your seat, how you sit, is going to be really important here. Inside of you, and outside of you actually, are energy channels, sa, nadis, in which runs qi, lung, prana. Sorry, no word in English. I can give you Tibetan and Sanskrit. And I think qi is Mandarin. But we just don't have that in English. So because of that, how you align your channels is really important. For those of you who need to sit in chairs, there's a way to do it in a chair. But it is easier and works better when you can do it cross-legged. These channels, your posture, it's incredibly important. I'm going to move this so I can see everybody. There we are. Your thoughts ride the chi. Your thoughts and your feelings are interwoven. So your thoughts and feelings ride the qi. When the qi is disarranged, your thinking and feeling will be disarranged. For this reason, finding a comfortable position, and because sitting in a perfect position for an hour and a half is hard for everybody, I will tell you, align your channels at any point when it becomes imperative that you do that, and then return to a complete position. In the meantime, feel free to stretch your legs and wiggle around and do whatever works. I want to show you something. Hunch over like this. Notice how you feel and what you are thinking. Now sit up, come back, your shoulders back and your chin up, tits to the wind position. Notice how you are feeling and what you are thinking. There's a difference in the subtle tone of your thoughts and feelings according to your body position. In order to clearly perceive things, having a direct up and down position where the central channel, which goes from your crown chakra all the way down in front of your spine through the middle of you and down to the dantian, four fingers below your navel, back about where your cervix is, it joins with the side channels. Having this in alignment when meditating, and even when spending a lot of time anywhere, is really important. If you work at a desk and you mostly spend your time slumped, you will be in danger of depression. If you mostly spend your time lounging back, you will be in danger of insomnia and hyperactivity. If you mostly spend your time twisted like a pretzel, you will be in danger of peculiar ideation, paranoia, channel squeaks. A channel squeak is when the amount of energy moving through your channels is enough and more than enough compared to how smooth and open and relaxed your channels are. If you have a channel constriction, we all do, our karmic formations are channel constrictions, and you run more than the amount of energy you're accustomed to through it, it will squeak. And that feels a little bit like you think you're going crazy for a little while. You're all emotional and you're easily offended and that. How many of you have attended a lot of Wongs? Have you noticed that before and after a Wong, sometimes there's the pre-Wong fight? Usually with your spouse or someone you're close enough to actually have it with. It's because you are running more energy, or the Wong is running more energy through your channels than you're accustomed to. And that sensation of a channel squeak feels like a hyper-emotionality. So be aware of that. And if you find your channel squeaking for some reason, energy, there's a couple of things you can do about it. One is to align them. They're much more likely to squeak when you're like this. Have you noticed that teenagers generally sit as pretzels? Have you noticed that teenagers generally have really squeaky channels? I'm not sure which is the cart and which is the horse on that one. But anyway, aligning your channels will help. So will settling your chi. The simplest way to settle your chi is to take a deep breath in through your nose, both nostrils, bring it all the way down into your dantian. So you're breathing into, can I use the word dantian in here? Four fingers below the navel, where your cervix is, where your uterus is. There's a pot there. You're breathing into that pot. So you deep breath in through the navel, it goes around through the channel, down into the pot. Out through your mouth with a hissing sound. It can be done by tongue against the roof of the mouth or pursed lips, but you want to slow it down as it comes out. So like this. Try it. Feel how that just sort of settles your chi, makes it a little easier for you to pay attention to your surroundings or whatever you're doing, brings you back from wherever your mind has wandered. Real simple, but little stuff really works. Of course, since you all were sounding like teapots, I could teach you to go like this and then do it. But the position is not necessary. With your channels in alignment and your chi settled, it is easier to notice things, because you are not highly distracted by rapidly moving thoughts and feelings which ride a chi which is rapidly moving through the channels. It just settles and slows it down a little bit. With your chi reasonably settled, it is important to notice a couple of things. One is that you are mortal, impermanent, and will die. Without having noticed this, there is nothing to base natural, innate, open awareness on. So to notice the impermanence of all phenomena is imperative. Phenomena is your thoughts and your feelings, which are mix. You know, your thoughts explain, justify, or complain about why you feel this way. You know, if you're in a bad mood, you'll find many things to think about that are annoying. Whereas if you start thinking about many things that are annoying, you can create a bad mood. You can't really separate easily thoughts from feelings. They're called inner phenomena. Outer phenomena is stuff. Tables, chairs, walls, buildings, cars, graffiti, stuff that appears to be outside of you. I say appears because it's important to notice how we experience stuff. We spend our entire lives, plural, messing with stuff. We're always trying to get the stuff the way we want it. To clean it, to arrange it, to order it, to improve our mood, to improve our thought process. We're always messing with stuff, phenomena, compulsively. Can't even stop mucking about with your thoughts, feelings, and the things that you are perceiving for even 1 minute. The outer phenomena, things like the fan. How do you experience that fan? What causes you to think there is a fan there? Because the word fan is a thought. If you'd never known fans in your life, goodness, you might think it was a fancy kind of prayer wheel. If you were a compa from the old country. So, your eyes experience color and shape in the cones and the rods in your retina, but that is interpreted, named, and experienced as the sensations in the retina send chi through the channels. And so a sensation in the sense organ eyeball is experienced as a fan. You don't know that there is a fan there, except by seeing it, hearing it, and feeling the wind on your skin. Without having the sensations, you would not experience a fan. It is also extremely difficult to observe an object without naming it. Oh, what have I got here? I'll hold up an object. See the object? Anybody not name the object? I'll try another one. Try not to name it. Did you name it? It's so automatic. That naming of things. And you name them according to, pardon me, I need to check and see if that is an emergency. It is not. I just wanted to make sure that Jan, who has been traveling with me and helping me, had not had something occur and needed help. Your sensations arise in your sense organs. Your interpretation of them is made of thoughts and feelings. You can't really separate the stuff from what you think the stuff is. Here, look. Thing. You named it. If you've never seen one of these before, you still thought a name. And then you had a feeling about it. Maybe you liked it. Maybe you didn't like it. Maybe you were curious about it. Do you see how all phenomena interweaves together? And how it interweaves in the process of thoughts and feelings, not in the process of sensations? Have you ever had a sensation, say, in your skin, as if something was crawling but there was nothing there, a little tickle? So when you have a sensation, I might feel a little tickle on my leg and I think, oh, there's something crawling on me, and then with a different sense organ I look and I don't find something crawling on me. So then I decide there wasn't, or I decide there was and it was invisible. Do you see how we do this? The important part is not the details, but how we interpret our sensations of the sense organs and turn them into an experience with our mind by thinking and feeling. How come you came here tonight? I'm going to bet it was because you thought about coming here. And you had ideas about what might happen. And you probably talked to yourself about it, and you may have talked to friends about why you would come versus why you would not come. And after conversing and thinking about it for a while, you made a decision to come. You had a feeling of wanting to come, or of not wanting to come but needing to please someone by coming, or of, your experiences will vary. But all of it was based on thinking about it. Can we agree that thoughts occur in mind? We define mind as the thinker of the thoughts. Your mind is your king. You do everything it says. And have you not had the experience of doing something that seemed like a good idea at the time, but maybe didn't turn out so well? You thought about it, you decided to do it, and maybe, oops, thinking you could get away with parking there, or more dramatic things in life. The second whiskey. Recognize the importance of your thoughts in your life. Everything you've ever done, you've done because you told yourself to do it. Because in that moment, you decided to do it by thinking about it. Mind's pretty powerful, isn't it? Might be the most powerful thing about you, since everything you've ever done has been in obedience to your thoughts, your feelings. And your thoughts and feelings have been about your perceptions of your sense organ or sense organs. This phenomena, thought, we're calling thoughts, feelings, inner phenomena, and stuff, outer phenomena. This phenomena, you're obsessed with it. You compulsively pay attention to phenomena. You obsessively and compulsively put your whole attention on what you're thinking, how you're feeling about that, and your interpretations of your sensory perceptions. That compulsion, which is where hopes and fears arise, is what traps us in samsara. We are chasing our tails. We are single-pointedly point-focused on this thought, and then the next thought, and then the next thought, and then the next thought. Constantly. And we are believing everything we think. That's how we get in trouble. What is a thought? Since you're obeying these damn things, and always have been, might it be worthwhile to see what the heck it is? This mind that is so much in charge of you, might it be of interest to see what it is? We rarely ask ourselves, what is my mind? We sort of vaguely think we know. We pop up a definition, yes, the thinker of my thoughts, next. So we had that thought, and now we're going to go on to another thought, like where shall we go for a beer afterwards? Slow down a minute. Can you see a thought? Pick a thought. Any thought. Think of a umbrella. Can you hold that thought for a while? You may notice after a few moments that you are thinking a number of thoughts about umbrella, but that you are not holding a single thought still. You can't, they are moving. All thoughts that you think come and go. You can't keep one. Now for a moment, stop thinking. Any takers, or were you all thinking about not thinking? Powerful little buggers, aren't they? Slippery. Can't grab them, can't get rid of them. You've been listening to yourself think since you were born. Maybe not in words until you were a couple of years old, but in a I want, I don't want kind of thought. Where do you do that? Where's your mind? Now, I know we have a certain amount of hearsay in this culture that the mind is in the brain. Just as in the Tibetan culture, we have a certain amount of hearsay that the mind is in the heart. And in the Chinese culture, we have a certain amount of hearsay, not in all of the Chinese culture, in parts of it, that it is in the liver. Well, have you ever seen your mind? Have you ever tried to see your mind? This incredibly powerful thing that's ruling your life, might it be worthwhile to get a look at it and see what it is? To actually see your mind, you will have to release your obsessive compulsive grasp of attention on that which is in your mind. Your thoughts, feelings, and perception. You will have to actually open your attention broader than that to see the mind itself in which these things arise. To do that, align your channels. If you are sitting cross-legged, your right leg would be on the outside and your left on the inside. Your hands would be comfortably in your lap, about where your dantian is, with your right hand on top of the left. your back straight, your chin tucked in to make a slight hook, which actually straightens the neck. Your teeth open, not shut. The edges of your tongue slightly in between them, holding them open, and your lips ever so slightly open. If you close the teeth of your jaw, it changes the way the channel sits back in here. The line of your gaze, eyeballs are really important. We're a visual species. Your attention follows your gaze. If you look over here, your attention will go over here. Try this. Look over that way without having your attention go that way. You see how it follows your eyes? So for this purpose, what we want to do is let our eyes relax, half open, following the line of our nose outward and down. Find a point on the floor in front of us where they naturally fall. And then let go of our focus on that point. The kind of eyeball focus that you use in order to look at a thing won't work for this. You need to open the focus of your eyes, which will allow your attention to relax its point focus on the constant coming and going of phenomena. This is the teaching of the body. And the relaxing of the gaze is perhaps the most important point. The teaching of the speech is to shut up. For a little while, stop talking to yourself. The teaching of the mind is to put your mind in neutral gear. This is not an attempt to stop thinking. But this is also not a following of your thoughts into the construction of stories. This is a relaxed, open attention in which thoughts, feelings, and perceptions are allowed to naturally arise and dissipate without you paying any great attention to them. Where are your thoughts, feelings, and perceptions occurring? Do not look for this with your intellect. Feel around for it with your attention. Are the thoughts happening inside your body or outside of your body? If outside of your body, are they in front of you or behind you, to the left or the right, above or below? If you do not find the thinking occurring in any of these directions, look inside. Look through your body in the same way you look for your car keys, carefully examining each spot with your attention to see if that's where the thoughts are happening.
start in your hair. Check your scalp. Your skull bone. Your brain. Left hemisphere or right hemisphere? Check out the glands. Perhaps it is in your eyes or your nose or your mouth or your ears. Letting your attention go from sense organ to sense organ, look and see if that's where the thoughts are occurring. Look in your neck and your shoulders. Look through each and every organ in your trunk. Examine your arms, your legs, hands and feet. Where are your thoughts happening? Do not do this by thinking about it. With your attention, feel around for it. For some people, thinking in pictures is helpful here. Visualize in your mind's eye a teapot. Your mind's eye is in your mind. Where's the picture of the teapot? Inside or outside? If you find, for instance, the teapot to be in your head, visualize something larger that will not fit between your ears. Visualize the car, bicycle, or bus that you came here in. Where's the picture? Some of you may be musicians or sound-oriented. Arise in your mind a song. You hear it in your mind's ear. Where is that song occurring? This practice is the inner mind Rushen from the text Yeshe Lama. If practiced, it will lead your attention to expand itself from point focus on the image of a teapot in your mind's eye to the infinite vastness of the mind in which that image arises. It is an opening of your attention. It is a relaxation of your usual point focus on thises and thats. Are there questions? How'd that go for you all? Did you find anything in a place? By repeatedly looking and looking again, to find your mind with your mind, an experience, a perception, an awareness will become apparent. If you have no questions, we are done. That's your homework.
Yes.
What about for, I'm not a materialist. A related story that I've read, I think in the Journal of Psychology or something. A woman in an old folks home experienced a stroke. And after she had the stroke, she couldn't stop hearing Irish ditties from when she was a kid. She smiled. And this went on for a while until the stroke resolved itself. So a brain surgeon or like somebody who studies psychiatry in that sense would probably say that this is an example of consciousness being in the brain and there being like faulty wiring.
Your energy channels, your nadis, sa, certainly do run through the brain. And there are some very complex chakras in the head area, here. When the wiring is faulty, the chi will move faultily, causing sensations which you may well interpret as sounds or thoughts, just as when you took certain positions, you felt a difference in your mood because you moved your channels. But if mind were only in the brain, how would you account for multiple lives, dying, being born? A baby's brain is not fully formed. And yet, when you get a baby, there is already obviously someone in there. And if you get two babies, they will be different from the very moment you get them. So, although the channels in the heart, the chakras, affect what you see, feel, hear, just as your sense organs do, they are not the totality of mind. Does this make sense to you? Mm. You can experience a sensation, say, in your yi, which will be very distinct. But then you're going to have thoughts about that sensation. So let's say something startles you. You experience a startle fear. And then you think, oh, it was a car backfiring. No, never mind. Or you think, oh, somebody was shooting at me. What you think is going to make a very big difference in how you relate to that sensation, which might be exactly the same. Now, if you think somebody's shooting at you, it's going to fan that sensation because you're going to talk to yourself about all the reasons why you should be afraid. And if you think it's a car backfire, it's going to diminish that sensation because you'll talk to yourself about all the reasons why you shouldn't be afraid. But if you look, actually look, rather than something you read, rather than hearsay, by your own perception to see where your thoughts are occurring, I think you'll find something quite more bigger than a brain. We have much here, say the Tibetans believe that our mind is in our heart, not the yogis, the common everyday cowherd. So they have absolutely no explanation for how someone could still be there after a heart transplant. His mind was transplanted, couldn't be. Whereas for us, thinking it's in the brain, we can't imagine how someone would still be there after a brain transplant. Now, could we? Same difference, but we're going on cultural hearsay. Experientially, and how to do this practice, are there any questions? Yes?
Do we have to, I noticed my hands, my thumbs went into a point.
That's fine. Yeah, just let them be comfortable. If they want to go to a point like this, that's fine. If they want to go like that, that's fine. A lot of that's going to depend on how long your thumbs are.
Okay, and that's always right hand.
Right hand on top.
Is there a reason for that?
The way the channel's set, where you have the left side with the red channel and the right side with the blue channel, you want it balanced like that because you are looking towards the side of openness. You want the function of openness to be more possible for your attention. So you want your chi to flow in a way that makes that more likely. Does that make any sense?
I don't know the right and left sides very much, but
the channels of your left side generally relate to open awareness, whereas the channels of your right side generally relate to the interconnectedness of phenomena. There's actually not a difference between the two, But in the symbols of Tantra, where we work a lot with the channels in the body and symbols, it becomes important. So if you look at all of the Buddha statues, the left leg is in and the right leg is out, or the left foot is on top of the thigh and then the right foot comes around it.
That's what I was going to ask you about leg positions next.
About?
I was going to ask you about leg positions next. So.
Well, if you can, a full lotus is excellent. You may have a genotype that can do that.
Otherwise, left
half
leg,
lotus.
Left leg in first.
And then right. Yeah, when you're going to do a full lotus, you put your left foot up on your right thigh, and then you put your right foot up on your left thigh, if you can do a full lotus. Many of us who are of North European descent have thighs that are a little bit too thick to do that comfortably, whereas the people of the Lumbini area, where the Buddha came from, and of the plains of India, have really thin thighs naturally. So, if you can, great, and if you can't, do a half lotus and it will work anyway. The whole idea is to have your weight settled so that it's right on the crack between your buttocks and your thighs rather than back on your tailbone. If it's back on your tailbone, you're going to get a little curve like this in your spine, and that will cause problems. Just as thoughts, feelings, and stuff, phenomena, inner and outer phenomena, cannot really completely be separated from each other, so physical sensations and body positions and mental sensations, thoughts and feelings, cannot really be separated from each other. It's too interwoven. Yes?
Some teachers of Dzogchen and like Talong teach that men and women have opposite genitals.
I've heard that. In my lineage, it is not taught that way, because generally it is thought that there's not that much channel difference in a man and a woman. You have an innie or you have an outie. But some women are much more yang than some men, who might be more yin, and some women are more yin. So it's not so much the gender you're born as who's born there, what your pogchas are. So if you look at the images of, say, Tara, she's got her right leg out. The right side is the active side. The left side is the spacious side. So action is on the outside with spaciousness on the inside. Bodhicitta, open-heartedness, great-heartedness, the dance of the hero, is symbolized by the vajra, which is always held in the right hand. Wisdom, open awareness, direct perception of the infinite openness of mind itself, just as it is symbolized by the bell, which is held in the left hand. It is the union of this that is enlightenment. Without the utter interconnected interpenetratingness of phenomena, without the vitality, the lucidity, the very aliveness of the universe, there would be no mind. Just a big dead old mechanistic nothing. But I think, I feel, I'm alive, I experience. So that's obviously not the case. the phenomena is right-sided. The space in which the phenomena dances is left-sided. In tantric symbolism, in reality, it all dances throughout everything. Did that make any sense?
Totally, yeah.
Okay, good. I wasn't sure. It's hard to exactly explain things in words. You need to actually perceive the open awareness, at least as a glimpse, which is most effectively achieved by doing this practice again and again for a number of hours, so homework tonight. So that tomorrow, when the pointing and the showing occurs with the text, you will have the basis to follow it, the experiential basis rather than the intellectual basis. Because in Dzogchen, intellectual basis is just going to get in your way. You'll end up thinking about it rather than perceiving it, which is about as satisfying as thinking about pizza. Yes.
Would you mind doing the settling the chi again that you did at the beginning?
So that's very, very simple and is useful to do anytime you feel yourself agitated, jittery, a little bit upset, or when you are going to try to sit and practice and you just want to settle into your position. All you do is you breathe in through your mouth. The air enters your two nostrils. It goes up and around and down. So you're breathing into your way deep. You're not holding the breath here. You're breathing all the way down. And then you're slowing down the out-breath a little bit by either closing your lips a bit or bringing the tongue to the roof of the mouth so that there's a little bit of back pressure as you blow out. So it comes out like a sigh rather than like a... In general, your abdomen will expand on the in-breath when you do this. Because you're breathing, you're bringing down the diaphragm, which is pulling the muscles outward of your abdomen. Feels good, doesn't it? All of us, sentient beings, living beings, have been chasing our tails from beginningless time through life upon life and birth upon birth. By trying to get phenomena the way we want it. However, you may have noticed by now that phenomena is impermanent. Even if you do get it the way you want it, it won't stay there. That obsession that we have with our thoughts, paying all of our attention to what we're thinking, to our interpretation of our sensory sensations and to how we feel about that interpretation. And we're just this tunnel focus on that all the time, trying to get it the way we want it. This is about relaxing
and opening your attention so that it is not for just for a few minutes. It's okay, your to-do list will still be there when you're done. But opening your attention so it's not this tight, cramped obsession with phenomena. It opens into a spacious awareness which is not limited to only phenomena. So that you are no longer limited to only looking at your thoughts, your feelings, and your sensory perceptions and the interpretations of those. But you are also able to see the innate spaciousness in which this occurs. For me to tell you that it's open, infinite, spacious, vast is kind of pointless, because I'm just giving you more words or thoughts to put your attention on. This is why we have a method for you to shift your attention yourself and to relax the orifice of attention so that it opens up to include mind as well as that which occurs in mind. Yes.
So, when you think about sleep, so, you know, thousands and thousands or tens of thousands of years ago, when man or woman had to sleep, they were exposed to getting eaten by a tiger or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
They still slept. Which means something in our design was very important about sleep to slow things down.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder, how would you draw a parallel between what you're talking about and sort of slowing things down, you know, making your thoughts less constricted to include things outside of physical phenomena and your own thoughts and feelings with sleep? Is that a way of augmenting sleep in some sense?
No, but sleep can be used to augment that. The mind relaxes naturally into openness. As you fall asleep for an instant, and then due to its habit patterns, karmic formations, pagjas, it then either falls into unconsciousness, dreamless sleep, or it makes some nice creations of thoughts, perceptions, sensations to focus its attention on. In between those two extremes of dreamless sleep, which is a dull unconsciousness, and dreaming sleep, there's a little gap. If you can learn to find that gap, you can rest in open awareness there. But that gap is pretty small for most people. It goes by really fast because we are not accustomed to relaxing there. We're accustomed to grabbing the next thing. In between the dreams, in between the lives in the bardo, there is also an opportunity. But most of us do not take this opportunity because we are habituated to grabbing the next thing, phenomena. We are habituated to our point focus. And therefore find it difficult to truly relax that, purely by habit, which is why meditation, especially Trekcha, which is the meditation of Dzogchen, is called practice. Because you gotta break a habit by repeatedly not doing it.
It's like stopping to bite your fingernails. Again and again, the urge to bite your fingernails is going to come up, and you have to not bite your fingernails. Again and again, the urge to look at something, a thought, a feeling, to put your attention on something, is going to come up. And to refrain from doing that requires a great deal of practice. Yes?
I wanted to ask you about the gaze, because when I first started meditating, I was doing a practice where the eyes were closed.
Mm-hmm.
And I find this half-open one very difficult to do, and I'm just wondering your thoughts on that.
Take your glasses off. Makes it much easier.
Yeah.
Your eyes will lose their focus automatically. Those of you who have the good fortune to wear glasses have a great advantage in being able to take them off, which immediately lets go of any visual point focus. You can't see.
But why would you not have the eyes closed?
Because you do not wish to reject phenomena and grasp as a singularity open awareness. We're not trying to snuff ourselves out like a candle flame, to grab onto emptiness. The dance of phenomena is the play of the vitality of the emptiness. So we don't want to make it go away. We just want to stop obsessing with it. And for this, since you need to be able to meditate while thinking, while walking, while talking, not just while sitting there, if your eyes are closed, you will bump into things. So we get used to doing it with the eyes half open, but unfocused. Eventually, whether your eyes are focused or not won't matter. But at this point, it's really important. Your attention follows your eyes. Here, look at this. When you look at it, you pay attention to it. So when you don't look at anything, it's easier not to pay attention to anything. If this is an intellectual exercise for you, it won't work for all of you. It has to be experiential. It's like, anybody here ever work on their car? You ever have a bolt stuck? They get stuck. You ever had the experience of in some plumbing or your car or something you're fixing, there's a stuck bolt and all you've got is a screwdriver? And you try banging it with the screwdriver in the hope, and you bark your knuckles and it just doesn't work. So your attention, it's a stuck bolt. Your intellect is a screwdriver. Put it down. You're not going to get the bolt loose with it. That was an analogy. Other questions? Yes.
So you said that the point isn't to stop thinking. Like,
correct.
Actually, the thoughts are going to arise. Are you just working towards not necessarily grasping at them or eventually having more space between them? Like, I've also noticed...
When thoughts arise in their natural state, without you grabbing them with your attention, they arise as nothing and nowhere. Actually, they do that anyway, only you don't think they do that because you think they're important and you're paying attention to them. So that's the grabbing on. It's not a matter of stopping thinking or stopping feeling or stopping perceiving, because aliveness is to think, feel, and perceive. We're not trying to unalive ourselves or unalive the universe.
It's a matter of trying not to be obsessive with the point focus that we're constantly and normally doing. So when we allow the thoughts to flow naturally and see them for what they are, they can't fool us anymore. And otherwise, they're going to fool us. You can surely, all of you, think of examples where you have been fooled by your thoughts, which have been describing a situation. And you have thought that the situation was the way your thoughts were describing it, because you believed your thoughts. Only later it turned out that that's not actually what was going on. We've all had that experience, repeatedly. Anyone who's in a relationship often has that experience. We misinterpret by how we talk to ourselves the other person's intent, thoughts, feelings. I did that. You know what I'm talking about. If you've ever had a lover, you know what I'm talking about. So it's a matter of learning not to make them something they aren't, so that we don't fool ourselves, because what traps us in samsara is a combination of the grasping of attention, that obsessive compulsive grasp of attention on phenomena, each little bit of it, and our disassociation from our experiences. And it's those two together that get us into trouble. See, you think you have experiences, right? You are experiences. You are made of experiences. You're not the same person you were at 16. How'd that happen? You had experiences which made you into something quite different. You are an experience. Not you have one. And we all know this sort of intellectually if we look at it. But we feel disassociated from our experience, almost as if there's an observer and we think it's real. Even though we can intellectually examine the observer and the observed, and with Majjhimika philosophy or quantum physics may become very clear intellectually that you can't separate the observer and the observation, the doer and the done. But we still experientially disassociate ourselves. So we think we are a permanent, singular, self-existent entity. Oops. So then we go to a lot of trouble to improve that permanent, singular, self-existent entity. Oops. When really, we're an ecology in a webwork of bigger ecologies. Hey, 90% of the cells in your body aren't you. You know that. So if you have a yeast overgrowth, ladies, you know about yeast overgrowth. So you get a yeast overgrowth with the sugar cravings. So a poor man with a yeast overgrowth steals a donut because the yeast are having sugar cravings. Who gets the karma, him or the yeast? You can't separate it out. You're an ecology, not an individual. If you can treat in different kinds of insanity and autism with probiotics and depression with probiotics, obviously your thoughts and your feelings and the thoughts and feelings of your inhabitants are not all that separate. And Gaia may well think she is a self-existent singular entity.
whose ecology we are a member of. So we can do this till the cows come home intellectually, pointing out lack of self-existence. And so you understand that, Madhyamika philosophy. If that worked, then all the quantum physicists would be turning into rainbows. They're not, because they're still disassociating, because it isn't experiential. So the first step is to free your focus from its compulsion to point focus and grasp phenomena. When that works, when that begins to unravel, it is much easier to see who it was that was doing all that grasping. Other questions? Yes.
Do we do anything with our breath in practice?
Breathe mostly through your nose and don't pay any particular attention to the sensations of your breath. Unlike certain practices in the Southern school, in the Northern Mahayana schools, which contain Vajrayana, of which this is the ninth level, we are trying to let our attention let go of the physical sensations and their interpretation, the thoughts which interpret the physical sensations, the feelings which are about what the thoughts have interpreted the situation as. For example, if I feel a pain in my toe, but I know I have arthritis in that toe, I'm not upset about it. It's like, eh. Whereas if I feel a pain in my toe and I don't know that, I might worry that something was wrong. See? Your feeling depends on what you think the sensation meant. Some dancing, if seen from a bit of a distance or in shadow form, might look like a fight. If you see two people dancing in some of the more extreme ways, you might misinterpret this. You've seen it with your eyeballs. Light and dark, shadow, color. It's easy to misinterpret that and make a story. Now they're your friends and you think they're fighting. So you feel bad about it. Little kids who walk in on their parents in sex will often think that they're fighting or hurting each other because of the sounds. It's a misinterpretation. They don't understand what's going on. So they make up a story. Little kids, inevitably, some little kid does that with their parents. Other questions? Do you all understand how to do this? Review. Align your channels. Gaze slightly downward, eyes half open. Release the point focus of your gaze. If you're wearing glasses, take them off, it's easier. Take a breath in through your nose and blow it out through your mouth to settle your chi. stop explaining everything to yourself for a moment. And put your mind in neutral. Let the thoughts arise and vanish as a sort of random association without following them or attempting to stop them. Look and see. Feel about with your attention, with your perception, to see where the thoughts are occurring. For some, making the thoughts visual rather than in words is helpful. Teapot, basketball, fire hydrant, truck, seashell. Let them randomly arise. Where are they doing that? Instead of putting your attention on the thought you're thinking, let it open into the infinitude of the ground of mind itself. This is mind looking at mind. While the thoughts arise and disperse as they will, it is useful to many. To take a picture of something, basketball, and see if you can find out where the picture is by feeling around for it, inside or outside. If outside, in front or behind, left or right, above, below, let's try an oak tree. Where is the picture of the tree? Now that won't fit between your ears. Let your attention open and settle not on the image, but on the infinitude, the infinitely open, the empty vastness, the indescribable everywhereness. Of the mind rather than the individual thoughts that arise and vanish within it. This infinite openness is actually quite natural. Your mind has always been there. And it has never been anything other than this. Relax and relax again. Mind, mind looking. not mind that the thoughts arise. Do not mind that they dissolve. When you become distracted and find that you are fixated on a thought or a feeling or a perception, relax. Take a deep breath in through your nose and out through your mouth. And resettle your awareness in its innate and natural openness. Mind looking. Just this is the practice. To seek your mind until you don't find it. For there is no there to that there where. It is not a thing. But within it is the arising of all things. Open awareness. Dharmakaya, nature of mind. Infinitely open, utterly empty. But not just a big old nothing. Lucid and vital with innate awareness. Dancing with thoughts, feelings, and perceptions. None of which are made of anything other than mind. All phenomena arises in mind. There is no phenomena that does not arise in mind. All phenomena is made of mind. Nothing is innately graspable. You cannot keep a thought. You cannot maintain a feeling. And perceptions are constantly changing as you reinterpret them. Mind looking. Without grasping or rejecting. Without any attempt to make it other than it is. There is nothing to improve here. Nothing to be acquired. And nothing to be maintained. The natural state of open awareness. Does not come and go. Your attention moves. Your mind has always been there. This is your own innate Buddha nature, pure from the very beginning, ungraspable and ungrasping. Relax and relax again. Into the natural state of open awareness. A Are there other questions? Then we are complete for tonight. Please do this at least twice on your own before we come together. So once for maybe 5 minutes before you go to bed, and maybe once again in the morning before we continue, so that your own experiences settle. Nge wan di hir nyur du da che chi sa la go pa shu. We are complete for this evening. May all beings be happy. May all beings be free.